Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In book one of his work on free choice of the will, in the dialogue with his student, Augustine sets out what he calls the due or proper ordering of a human being. And what he means there is considering the human being as, you might say, a complex of different powers or faculties. How is it that these ought to be arranged in relation to each other? Or, if you want to look at it another way, which of them should be ruling or determining what a person is doing through the agency of the will. Now, Augustine thinks that there is something that he calls the eternal law, and part of this includes a certain structuring of not just human beings, but also what we would view as lower beings, less developed beings, beings that are lacking in rationality or perhaps even in sentience. And so Augustine sort of reconstructs with his student how it is that, you know, all these levels to human being are built upon each other. He also takes a few excursions into discussion of the relation between some of them that are particularly important. And I do want to signal that right off the bat before we jump into looking at these different levels, because his framing of it works along these lines. He says that there is a law, an eternal law, by which it is just that everything should have its due order. And he says, you know, this applies to governments and temporal laws and nations. And then he says, well, what about human beings? Does this apply to us? And then he says, tell me, are you absolutely certain that you're alive, to his student? And the student says, yeah, of course I am. There's nothing more certain that I know of. And then he says, can you distinguish between living and knowing that you live? Can you make this distinction? There's the fact that you're alive and the processes of living. And then there's you knowing that you're alive. And it doesn't have to be some sort of great, systematic, worked out knowledge. It can just be, I know that I'm alive. I am self-conscious of the fact that I not only am conscious, but that I live. And so he goes on and he talks about the difference between us and animals, but then he gets to another point a little bit later on. So he says, animals live, and as we now see, they live without reason. And he says, so now you see that you know what you said you did not know. Not everything which lives knows that it lives, though everything which knows that it lives necessarily lives. And so the student says, yeah, that's right. So then he asks, well, which of these is better? Which of these is more excellent? And the student says, to know that we live. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Augustine then says, do you think that to know that we live is better than life itself? And you might say, whoa, that's, how are you going to do that if you're not alive, right? Knowing that you're alive is basically predicated on the assumption that you are living. He's not saying, oh, well, let's strip away life from you and compare them side by side. Because there's something else going on here. He says, do you perhaps understand that knowledge is a higher and purer form of life? Since no one can know unless he has understanding. What else is understanding? And here's a beautiful phrase here. Than a life brighter and more perfect through the very life of the mind. So this is a really important little passage here, because what it clarifies for us is that as we move from these lower levels that we share in common with animals and plants up into these higher levels, we're not talking about functions that are totally separated off as if there's these, you know, hermetically sealed off containers or something like that. Instead, you have, and this is a very common notion in ancient philosophy, you find it among the Platonic and then later Neoplatonic and also among the Stoic philosophers, there are these degrees of being. And as you move up the degrees of being, these are differences in intensity that sort of build off of each other. So that's an important consideration. Another important consideration that he brings up too is he's talking about knowledge, and he says, you fully fully grasped and explained my own view, provided that knowledge can never be evil. And then Augustine says, yes, I think knowledge cannot be evil unless we give the word a new meaning and use knowledge for practical experience. Practical experience, you know, we say we have knowledge, but that actually can be bad in some respects. And he gives an example of being punished, but we might also think about the practical experiences about doing things that we're not supposed to do and getting away with them, right? How to do that. So then there's this long discussion about what it is that we human beings have in common with other things and what we don't. So he says, whatever it is by which human beings are superior to beasts, whether mind or spirit or whether either of them is the correct term because we find both in sacred scripture, if this governs and controls all the other elements of which the human being is composed, then the human being is duly ordered. So when the top part, mind or spirit or reason, is running the show, then we have proper order within our souls and we are following the eternal law, which is guiding us towards that, right? So how could we go wrong? So he says, think about what it is that we have in common with other things. Plants, animals, humans all share in nourishment. They consume something, right? Plants don't go around and, you know, shovel food in their face or anything like that. There are a few carnivorous plants, of course, you know, like the Venus flytrap, but for the most part, they're consuming things in a much more sedate manner. Growth, that's something central to plants and to animals. Generation, that is reproduction. If you're suffering from allergies, it could be because there's so much pollen in the air, and pollen is basically one way in which plants are going to reproduce. Bite down on fruit, and you got seeds in your mouth, and you're like, I don't like these. Well, that's how the plant reproduces itself. And then the function of health, a sort of, you know, overall organic, whatever we want to call it, good state of the creature. Those we share in common. Then at the level of animals, we have sense perception. And he's talking about, you know, what it is that we might be better or worse than, but we all share in some sort of sense perception. He says beasts have sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch often more keenly than we do. We also have movement. He talks about strength, vigor, muscular power, swift and easy movement of the body. We'll just consolidate all that into movement and the capacity for it. And then seeking bodily pleasure and avoiding bodily pain. Says we have this all in common with the beasts, with the non-rational animals. Now, some thinkers in the past would say what makes us good is what we don't have in common with the animals, the higher part of ourself. Augustine actually subdivides that. He says not all of how we differ from the animals is necessarily good by itself. It has to be, again, in proper order. So what does he bring up? Very interestingly, he says that there are some other things that we have that beasts don't seem to share, but which are not the highest qualities of a human being. Laughing and joking, our sense of humor. That's fun, but it's not the highest part of ourselves. He also says there's love of praise and glory and ambition. Although the beasts don't have these passions, we must suppose that we're better than the beasts because we have them. Why? Because when this craving is not subject to reason, it actually makes us miserable or wretched. So, you know, we're different than the animals in that, for example, I mean, you could say animals have social hierarchies, but animals don't pride themselves on how much money they have in the bank or other, you know, quite arbitrary signs of their social hierarchies. It tends to be based on things a little bit closer to their bodily nature than the, you know, crazy stuff that, you know, looking at it from a perspective of reason, the crazy stuff that we think actually matters so much. So what is the upshot here? Well, if we're going to be properly ordered, that is in accordance with the eternal law, the highest should rule the lower, not the reverse. So we shouldn't simply be driven by our desire for bodily pleasure or avoiding bodily pain. If we make that the central priority and we only use our reason or mind or knowledge to try to do that, we're actually not just going to end up with the wrong consequences and actions. We're screwing ourselves up. We're subverting the proper ordering of things. Likewise, if our whole life is spent just about, you know, laughing and joking, and you might say, oh, what about those poor comedians? Well, you know, it's possible to be a comedy writer and not to make comedy the only thing in your life, that you're always just looking for a laugh. You might have productive human relationships with other people and value some things. Comedy can actually be used as a great tool fuel, as it is in many great comics, for higher things. You know, love of praise, glory, you know, social status, all that sort of stuff that could also drive people to make the wrong sort of decisions using their faculty of reason or mind or whatever we're going to call it, just to try to attain those ends. Or it could be a combination of these sorts of things. The point is, unless reason is running the show and then ordering all these other things in turn, you're going to have some real problems. And that is going to be not only a product of the free choice of the will, it's also going to condition the later decisions of the will, because it's going to introduce all sorts of vicious dispositions, and a person is not going to be very well off indeed with respect to them. He actually talks about this a little bit later. He says that the punishment is the mind being ruled by passion, being robbed of its store of virtue, being dragged hither and thither, poor and needy, now judging false for true, now defending, now attacking what before it approved, running off into fresh falsehood, all sorts of other things. He says the passion rage like tyrants and throw into confusion the whole soul and life of men with storms from every quarter. It doesn't necessarily have to be quite so dramatic as that. One could just be, you know, devoted to a life of pleasure seeking and unable to see anything outside of that sphere and missing out on a whole lot of what makes us distinctively human as a result, or driven by ambition all the time and constantly getting into conflicts with people, which are not going to be particularly productive and are going to, again, sort of truncate the life of the soul. So this is what Augustine calls the right ordering between the different parts or functions of the human being. When they're all aligned properly, when reason or mind or spirit is running the show in accordance with wisdom or knowledge, then everything goes as it ought to. Otherwise, what you've got is essentially the human being as damaged goods. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.